So I'm very happy to be here and describe how we try to build a smooth path for packets between applications and the wire. This work supported by the European Commission through a project called Change. And so, given that we have a short time, I will not enter into many details on why we need to do packet I/O, but let's focus on the mechanisms that we have for that. One option is to use the sockets that BPF, raw sockets, whatever. They are flexible, they are portable, they are available on many operating systems, but they are slow, and the reasons why they are slow, we will see them in a few slides. Then somebody thought, okay, we try to improve some of the components that make the socket slow, have memory mapped buffers. And yeah, this solves a part of the problem, but quite often these memory map buffer solutions are based on the internal representation of packets which uses mbuf, skbuf. So it's like running a fast car on a bendy road, and you still have performance problems because the car cannot exploit its power, its speed. So another option is to run within the kernel, netfilter, pfil, click, netgraph, whatever. And this can be really fast. You have access to all the resources. It can be dangerous if you overwrite some memory that you shouldn't. You might crash the entire system. And then, of course, you can talk to vendors and ask them, use the solution that they provide. There are libraries that provide socket emulation. It's unclear what they do. Maybe they access the address directly, maybe not. They have quite good performance, but quite often they are tied to their own hardware. So you might have problems in moving to a different architecture, to a different card. So we try to see, is there a way in which we can design a system that is fast and safe to use? It's independent from the hardware, from the operating system. And we think we have a reasonable solution for that, and NetMap is the thing that we built. It can do line rate transmission or reception with just a single core and a 10 gig interface, so this magic number that I tell all the time, 14.88 million packets per second, it's for 64 byte packets. And we can do that with just one core at 900 megahertz. And by comparison, if you use a socket-based traffic generator, you get these results down there, up to a million packets per second per core. If you use the internal generator that Linux has, it's called PacketGen, you go to above about 4 million packets per second with one core. And so we think it's pretty interesting to use NetMap for certain types of application. The way we reach these results is what we will describe in the next slides. So we try to measure the network stack, find out where the bottlenecks are, extract from that some design ideas, and then show how we implemented that. Now, the network stack is heavily layered, and so we wanted to figure out where the time is spent, whether there is a single bottleneck or there are multiple bottlenecks. And so we try to measure these things. And the way we measure that was, is shown in the picture. We took a fast packet generator, which can issue system calls very frequently, and then instrumented the kernel, trying to interrupt the processing at different levels in the into the network stack, before the system call, after the system call, the AP level in the device driver, and so on. And by measuring the average packet rate over 1 second intervals or something like that, we can get an idea of what are the expensive parts of the code. And this is simpler to measure than introduce using the TSC to get timestamps, because the TSC takes a long time to fetch samples, and then we would have to compute averages and so on. These experiments that I will report next, also the final results, are on about 3 gigahertz Intel 4-core CPU and 10 gig in Intel interface card. And the operating system is a 64-bit version of FreeBSD. The Linux version of NetMap has a similar performance. So this list is the number of functions that are invoked from the send to to the packet that goes out on the wire. So it's very similar to the picture that I showed before. And so we see that, for instance, we can issue a system call every 8 nanoseconds. If we break right before the system call, then if we enter the kernel and stop there, it takes 100 nanoseconds for the path, and then more and more as we move down the protocol stack. And one thing we see from this column delta shows how much time is spent in each of the big blocks that are on the path from the system call to the wire. We see that there are several points where you spend a lot of time. So 100 nanoseconds in a system call, 130 doing the mem buffer allocation, the copy in, another 200 in IP output. There is an expensive route lookup here, and setting up the IP header is also time consuming. Ether output on FreeBSD is particularly expensive, maybe on Linux is better. Device programming is also quite expensive, 220 nanoseconds, just to take a packet from the mbuf and construct the descriptor in the NIC is way too much, in our opinion, my opinion. So now we know how things are in the network stack. There are significant chunks of time that are spent all across the path. Some things cannot be avoided. We surely need to do a system call if you want the system to be safe. Device programming, as it is extremely expensive, and my impression is that this is because we have mbuffs, but mbuffs have a ton of options and configurations. So parsing them to produce some information that can be written into the NICS register is very expensive. And why it's a bad idea, I will show with this game. So which game of Tetris would you like to play? One where the blocks are all square, or one where the blocks have like mbuffs, different shapes and orientation, etc. And I think the answer is pretty clear. So we tried in NetMap, we tried to have very simple blocks or packet descriptors, and those are very efficient to manipulate. There are other things that cannot be simply removed altogether. For instance, we don't need to do data copies if we do memory mapping, for instance. We don't need to do memory allocation if we try to pre-allocate memory, both inbound and outbound, and so on. So our strategy now was, I measured the send to system call, which uses many parts of the IP stack. I'm in the next part of the presentation, I'm addressing a simpler problem, so raw packet I/O. It's useful to determine what's the maximum performance we can get from the system, and it's also poorly performed by the poorly supported by the current APIs, so it has a very high return, both for me in terms of presenting the result and from the users, because there are people who really need to run traffic generators or packet capture systems, etc. And the guidelines were, we tried as much as possible to avoid using special features of the hardware, because otherwise we would restrict the applicability of our solution. We tried to amortize costs over large batches of packets if possible. This is the case for system calls. Remove some unnecessary works, copies, allocation, etc. And reduce the runtime decision with a single frame format. Also, one thing that I've been working on the network stack for more than 10 years. And I've always been afraid of modifying device drivers because there are so many of them. Now, I broke the rule here, and I thought, OK, I'm allowed to modify device drivers as long as the system can be maintained, meaning that I want to make small modifications and more or less mechanical modifications so they can be reproduced easily in different drivers. The system netmap is built around a shared memory region, this block here, which contains basically packet buffers, buffer descriptors, and all data structures that applications need to transmit or receive data. And in our system, buffers are pre-allocated when you open the device, and we'll see how, and they are numbered, and they are fixed size enough to store a full packet, a full frame. So currently it's 2K, but it's programmable. We can have buffers that accommodate Jumbo frames. The netmap ring here is basically a circular queue of buffers that we use for transmission and for reception. each slot in the ring has a small fixed format, which is independent of the hardware. It contains the index of the buffers, the length of the payload, and some flags. And also in the ring, we have the usual stuff. We have an index of the current transmit-receive point and the number of buffers that are available for transmission or that have been returned after reception. And the NetMapIF is basically a directory of all the rings that are attached to a particular interface. So in the common case, all the interfaces, low-performance interfaces, have only one transmit and one receive ring. The 10 gig interfaces tend to have multiple transmit and receive rings to share the load among multiple CPUs. So the NetMapIF supports all these variations. For protection, we rely on the standard operating system mechanism, so the NIC registers and data structure are not exposed to user space and not in the shared memory region. The only thing that is shared is are the buffers. The task of the kernel is to validate the information that is in the NetMap ring and use it to program the network interface. And so we have no chance to crash the kernel unless I make a mistake in writing the code, but the user shouldn't have any chance to crash the kernel. In terms of ownership and synchronization between the user and the kernel, since the memory is shared, there are no races because the synchronization is implicit in the system calls. So the interesting part of the ring, basically the global fields, current, avail, and the buffers that are in use, are always owned by the application that is running, except during the system call when the application stopped and the kernel can manipulate those parts of the rings. And also, interrupt service routines never touch the shared memory region. The only thing that they do is wake up an application that might be sleeping, waiting for transmit buffer to be free or for incoming packets. In order to access the use NetMap to transmit or receive packet, the first thing you do is the equivalent of creating a socket. So you open a special device, issue an IOCTL, and in the argument you put the name of the interface that you want to use in NetMap mode. And then on return, this IOCTL will tell you success or failure, and also how big is the memory region, and where is the offset, where is the NetMapIF structure located. So you memory map the region, and you're done, at least. You have access to the data structures. And to transmit packets, now, in this data structure, the NetMap ring tells you which one is the first slot that you can use for transmission and how many slots you can use. So you start filling, the application, starts filling the buffers with the payload of the packets, writes the length of the payload, and increases the current index and so on. And once you have completed the list of packets that you want to transmit, you issue an IOCTL, which now validates the content of the ring, programs the interface, and possibly reclaims buffer that for transmission that have been already completed. On the receive side, we have the dual behavior. You first issue an IOCTL to ask the kernel whether there are packets available, and after that, you know that there are 35 packets starting at offset 1020, and then you can consume the packets, advancing the current pointer, reducing, decreasing avail, and at the next IOCTL, the kernel will return more packets and reuse the buffers that you have freed. These IOCTLs are non-blocking, which is one possible use of the NetMap API. It's not the only one, of course. You want to sleep whenever there is nothing useful to do. And we use PolySelect for that. The operating system supports them. So we just extended we implemented the handlers for the NetMap file descriptor to support PolySelect. And basically, with PolIn and PolOut, you decided whether you want to look at the receive rings or transmit rings, and the poll will return whenever there is space in the ring for transmission or when you have buffers with new packets. The interesting thing here, to some degree, is that interrupt mitigation is the technique that is used to reduce the interrupt load on the system. So you delay the interrupt, so never exceed a certain rate. Those delays are propagated to the user space process. So this means that you can make an efficient use of the energy on your system. KQ and or EPOL support will be added at some point. It's not poll and select are not the only way to do synchronization between a process and the kernel. And we have multi-queue and multi-core support, and that's quite natural with the arrangement that we have. Basically, we have one netmap ring per physical ring on the network card. So if a card has multiple queues, we have multiple netmap rings. And the default behavior when you issue the IOCTL is to associate to bind the F file descriptor to all the rings in the card. But with the argument in the IOCTL, you can tell the system to associate just a specific ring pair to the file descriptor. So you can open multiple file descriptors on the same card, bind them to different ring pairs, and then have different threads handling the file descriptors. And then we use also the we can reuse pthread set affinity, which is standard system call, to bind a thread to a specific core. So everything is working, and the policy to associate rings to cores to thread, etc., can be defined by the users, and it's not hardwired in our system, which is good because I had no idea on how which policy I would like to implement or people would like to use. In terms of communication with the host stack, the model of operation of NetMap is that when you have a card in NetMap mode, the data path between the card and the host stack is cut. So packets never reach the host. And nevertheless, the operating system believes the card is still there. And so tries to send packets to the card, tries to reconfigure the card. Now, for the management commands, all the commands work the same. So I can change the address, I can bring the interface up and down using ifconfig, all the standard IOCTLs. In terms of sending and receiving packets, the host stack will try to send packets, for instance, directed to the to an address reachable through the interface. And those packets will end up in a new NetMap queue, this red one, for instance. And packet from the host stack will reach this red NetMap queue. And using another NetMap file descriptor, we can read these packets from the user space, and if necessary, we can reinject them into the card through using another NetMap file descriptor. And similarly, in the other direction, if we receive a packet from the card that is meant to go to the host stack, we can pass to another special NetMap queue, and that will be sent to the host stack. And the mechanism to control this queue is the same that we use for the interface. When I have multiple interfaces, one thing I would like to do is forward packets between interfaces. And because we have a single memory region that contains all buffers and all the descriptors for all the interfaces that we use in NetMap mode, we can do this with a truly zero-copy mechanism. We just swap the buffer indexes between a receive and a transmit ring, and basically the code is like this. And this is really, really cheap. And also, this zero-copy mechanism works between the queues connected to the host stack and those connected to the interface. So if we want to implement a firewall, for instance, or a NAT box, that's a very convenient mechanism to use. In terms of implementation, the code is very short and simple. It's about 2,000 lines. 2,000 lines of codes for the common part, the interface with the operating systems. And then we have small device-specific patches. So it was allowed to modify the drivers, but as you can see, the modifications are in the order of a few hundred lines of code, so 10% of the size of each driver. We have a pickup emulation library, which is equally small, and that's very convenient because we don't have to modify application. We can just run anything that uses pickup, almost anything that uses pickup on top of NetMap by just swapping the dynamic library underneath. In terms of performance, so we measure two things. First, the raw performance of the API, how fast we can send and receive packets, and then we can look at how application can make use of this API. So this is the same picture I showed before, comparing different solution for a traffic generator and variable clock speeds. In our system, I could change the speed at steps of about 150 megas from 0.15 to about 3 gigahertz. And so we see that NetMap saturate at 900 megahertz if I use one core. If I use two cores, for instance, I can saturate at 450. If I use four cores, I saturate about 300 megahertz just because I don't have an intermediate step between 150 and 300. Now, a lot of this performance comes from the use of large bars in the IOCTL or the PoL. If I make the bars smaller, of course, performance decreases. However, it doesn't need to be so large before we can saturate the link. Even with a burst of 8 packets, we can do line rate. So this is an interesting result. And this point is interesting here. With a batch burst size of 1 packet, basically it means that we can run about 2.5 million system calls per second. And actually, system calls are very expensive in the operating system, so that's something that we will need to study and see how we can optimize them. On the receive side, performance is similar in terms of throughput versus clock. And the only thing that appears here, but this is an artifact of the hardware, not a fault of NetMap, is that depending on the packet size, we cannot reach line rate. So it seems that at least the card that we had tries to write to memory exactly as the amount of bytes that have been received. So 64 bytes are written as a single line. 64 bytes is a cache line. If the card wants to write 65 bytes, this seems to be translated into a write for the first 64, then a read for the next 64 from memory, update one byte, and write back the second block. And this is why, for instance, between 65 and 127, performance is lower, then improves at 128, then decreases, and then we reach a point where we have enough bandwidth on the bus to do line rate, irrespective of the packet size. Now, in this table, we show the forwarding performance with various mechanisms, and again, using one core. So as a reference, I took FreeBSD bridging, is about 700,000 packets per second. If I use if I do forwarding between interfaces using the LippyCap emulation that I mentioned, I do about 7.5 million packets per second, which is not bad. Of course, if I use the native API, which doesn't even touch memory or copy memory, I do line rate at less than the full clock speed. We try to modify a number of applications, including OpenVSwitch switch and Qlik. For OpenVSwitch switch, okay, the original code wasn't really fast, but we modified it so that even the implementation user space using the standard LippyCap could do about 800,000 packets per second. And replacing the pickup library with NetMap got another 4 times speed up. And for Qlik, we got similar results. The previous version of Qlik user space was doing about 400,000 packets per second. Replacing the LippyCap got up to 4 million packets per second. We worked with Ed in February to have a native version of Qlik, but I haven't yet had the time to benchmark it. The availability, so it's a standard component in FreeBSD. On the NetMap page, you can find a code snapshot. I have also bootable images for PicoBSD, for FreeBSD and Linux, papers presentation. I have a Linux version, so if there are any Linux committers that want to import it, I'm happy to help. Runs on several hardware cards, and if you give me hardware and programming information, I'm happy to try and write a modification for NetMap. There are a few open issues, and NetMap doesn't solve all the networking problems in the world, and especially the host stack is not yet able to use the extra speed. We need some more work to make it that fast. The model of operation, now NetMap cuts the connection between the host stack and the card. Some people would like to have NetMap work like BPF, so completely transparent. again, if you make the mechanism too flexible, probably you end up into the Tetris problem that we saw before. And the system call performance is a bit critical. Whenever you have a poll, whenever you invoke something that requires the scheduler to run, we notice that we have latency in the order of 1, 2 microseconds, 3 microseconds. That's a really long time, especially at very high packet rates. Current and future work. So recently, we have been doing a very fast switch based on NetMap between the virtual interfaces. I can give you more details in the afternoon during the poster session. And that's been released yesterday. Last week. And we are working on applying NetMap techniques to the network stack. And then I'm done. Question here or in the afternoon?
I'm from University of Toronto. Very interesting tool. My question is about, have you had a chance to look at the NetMap's precision? I mean, in terms of when you look at a specific rate, have you looked at the CDF of inter-arrival time of back-to-back packets?
I'm not sure if I understand.
So if I set a 200 megabits per second rate, how does the CDF of back-to-back packet interarrivals look like? Does it look like a fixed line, or does it send a bunch of packets back-to-back and then waits a little bit and sends another bunch of packets back-to-back?
Okay, but there's probably a misunderstanding. My packet generator was just a test application, so it bursts packet out, and I have no way to specify a rate.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Second question is that, does NetMap work for closed loop protocols, or is it just open loop, like TCP, UDP? Is there any difference?
Again, I don't follow the question, sorry.
Can I use NetMap to generate TCP?
NetMap is not a traffic generator.
Sure, to use NetMap for closed loop packets.
I have no idea.
Okay. Thanks.
Any other questions? All right.
Okay. Thank you.